Good morning, everyone. Certainly hope you all had a fine night's rest and beginning the first morning service anyway here on this first annual Sabbath day of the Feast of Tabernacles 1979. As I mentioned last night, this is the 53rd annual Feast of Tabernacles in this era of God's church, and whether you quite realized it or not, this is already the 8th year here in Wisconsin Dells. Just amazing how rapidly the time goes by, but the first year that services were held in this building was back in 1972. And this, of course, was the final one of the buildings such as this that the church built. We were, in those days, very, very hard-pressed to find facilities this large in areas other than the major metropolitan centers of the country. Of course, you could go to Philadelphia or Detroit or Chicago or Los Angeles or any of the large cities at that time and find big arenas that would be ample as far as size and facilities to hold a festival crowd. But on the other hand, Mr. Armstrong has felt that we should try as much as possible to get out of the cities, to get away from that environment for the Feast of Tabernacles, at least wherever it's possible to do it. So we were building these facilities at that time, and this building here, these grounds here, of all of the facilities that we ever built, certainly are the finest. And we're still able to use it on into the 8th year this year. So it's good to see such a large crowd once again in Wisconsin Dells, and we hope this year to have nearly 10,000 people here. Certainly there will be somewhere between 9 and 10,000 people for the Feast of Tabernacles this year in Wisconsin Dells for the 8th year here. Well, we hope everyone had a good night and that you're all well on the way to observing, as Mr. Armstrong said, one of the most important festivals in 1900 years, and we hope that in this era of the church that it can be one of the greatest festivals that we've observed in some 53 years. I thought I might read to you this morning just very quickly a few comments that came into Pasadena, into the mail receiving office, comments that people wrote in expectation of the Feast of Tabernacles this year. Here is one from Springfield, Missouri, and says, "My wife and I are so excited about the upcoming Feast of Tabernacles 1979. This is the first time since I have been out of high school that my vacation time will be perfect for the feast. I have lost two previous jobs because of keeping God's holy days." So there's a young man who can definitely appreciate God's blessing and protection. He lost two previous jobs simply because of keeping the feast. "This year, however, will now be my 10th feast, and it will be my wife's 23rd or 24th festival." So apparently, this man married a young lady whose parents were attending services for the Feast of Tabernacles. It's interesting, this is also my 24th Feast of Tabernacles, having begun with my father, my parents. The first year I attended was back in 1956. Another one from Kentucky. "I'm really looking forward to the feast this year more than I ever have before. With all the trials the church has gone through this past year, we need this feast to draw us all close together." And of course, that is one of the purposes of the Feast of Tabernacles, to draw us close together, to help to get our minds back on this phase, anyway, of the plan that God has for mankind, to strengthen us and to stabilize us in the autumn of the year. Another one from Texas. "I received my feast confirmation today. Feast fever is running high here," she writes, "and I'm looking for the cure at the Lake of the Ozarks." Well, I hope we all get the cure for feast fever right here in the Dells this year, too. Another one from Buffalo, Kentucky, and they're attending in Saratoga. It was interesting to me to see this comment coming from that area, because last year, even though we have one of the most beautiful sites in Saratoga Springs that we've ever had for the Feast of Tabernacles, it would be difficult in just a short period of time to fully describe it, except to say that it has the beautiful trees and forests and outdoors atmosphere that we have right here in the Dells, but it also has one of the finest auditoriums and stages in the nation. because at that site, the Philadelphia Philharmonic Orchestra summers there, and the New York City Ballet also has its summer headquarters at the Saratoga site. So we come in just at the end of the summer season, and it's a little dicey as far as the weather is concerned. Now, the Chamber of Commerce, and Chambers of Commerce, I guess, are wont to do this type of thing, said that the average temperature in Saratoga Springs over the past 50 years during that week that we had intended to be there last year averaged 70 degrees during the day. Well, leading up to the Feast of Tabernacles, it was just beautiful last year, absolutely gorgeous weather. There had been a little bit of a frost one night, and the trees were just starting to turn, the oranges, the yellows, the beautiful hue of colors. And the night the feast started, however, the temperature plunged to 20 degrees. So they had a rather chilly beginning, but perhaps having been at Poconos in previous years, it really wasn't all that much different. At least they didn't have the rain of the Poconos up there. But anyway, this family is quite excited. I am getting to be quite excited over the feast this year. I just know this will be the best feast I ever kept. And probably in the back of this person's mind is hoping it would be one of the warmest, too. It is now my sixth Feast of Tabernacles, and they really do keep getting better. Another one from Tyrone, Oklahoma. I'm getting so anxious for the feast to arrive, hopefully to a new site, which in itself is exciting, but also rejuvenated with the spiritual food I know we will receive this year. These people apparently going to Biloxi, Mississippi. I am praying for those who will be giving the sermons that God will inspire them, and also the listening. And that, of course, is just as important as the inspiration of the sermon, that our minds are open and we're able to receive the message that God wants us to have. Also, that we will be doers of the word, not just hearers. And then finally, from Winfield, West Virginia, I am looking forward impatiently for this year's feast, and I am going to make it the best ever. And perhaps that is the key to having the greatest feast, or one of the greatest festivals in this era of the church anyway, is the kind of preparation that each of us make in our own prayer and Bible study during the feast, and having our mind not only on the work that God is doing, as Mr. Armstrong mentioned last night, but also having our minds on our own spiritual growth, our own spiritual development at this Feast of Tabernacles, and let God strengthen us for the upcoming responsibilities that we're all going to have in the work over the next several months. Well, brethren, today, this morning, on this first annual Sabbath, during the morning service, traditionally, we take up the offering, and Mr. Armstrong wants us to give a little bit of progress or history of the work over this past year. And for all of the offering services across the country, we have prepared a little bit of a summary of what has happened as far as publishing and as far as the work is concerned, including Mr. Armstrong's travels over this past year. So we want to go over that and just read briefly some of the highlights of what God has done in the work this past year at the time of the offering, because it's important for all of us to know as fully as possible what God is doing and what is being accomplished throughout the world, across the United States, as a result of our financial support. Of course, part of which are the annual Holy Day offerings that we're privileged to give. Let's turn back first to Deuteronomy, the 16th chapter, however, and read what simply is an instruction, a command that God gives us with which we're all familiar. And probably this scripture has been read in all of the local congregations, either on the Day of Trumpets or the Day of Atonement leading into the Feast of Tabernacles. But in Deuteronomy 16, verse 16, God simply says, "Three times in the year shall all of your males, all of your families, appear before the Lord your God in the place which he shall choose." And of course, this site, which is owned by the church, is a site which God selected some years ago, in particular for the Feast of Tabernacles. "And shall appear in the place which the Lord shall choose, in the Feast of Unleavened Bread in the spring, the Feast of Weeks, or the Feast of First Fruits, as Mr. Armstrong explained last night, and in the autumn, in the Feast of Tabernacles, that great feast including the last great day, which highlights this autumn season. And they shall not appear before the Lord God empty, but rather, and this is something that is dependent on everyone's own situation, their own ability, their own thought and preparation for the offering, but every man shall give as he is able. And that's something that no one can determine for you, but it's something that you, alone with your God, need to determine in thinking about what is possible according to the blessing that God has given you over this past year, and certainly since the earlier spring festivals, what you're able to do for the offering. And it is an important facet of these annual festival days. Every man shall give as he is able according to the blessing of the Lord your God, which he has given you. So, brethren, the offerings are something we should be thinking about, praying about, asking God's guidance and direction in, not only for today, but also for the final annual Sabbath coming up at the end of this Feast of Tabernacles, the final festival for this entire festival year or seasons. Well, the festival offerings, then, are not a ritual, but a chance for all of us to become, again, deeply involved, even to the point of giving of our own financial substance, the wealth that God has given to us, deeply involved within the work. And faithful tithes and faithful offerings have always been a hallmark in the New Testament era of Christianity, and have always been a hallmark of God's servants going all the way back into the Old Testament. And many, many times in the work that God was doing back in the book of Nehemiah, we'll see a little bit more about that this afternoon in the sermon concerning the meaning of this day and the explanation of its relationship or its prophecy, really, of the millennium which is coming. A little bit more about that period of time, because it is a very significant, a very important period, even though 1,500 years ago for all of us today. But at that time, at other periods of time, God's people, God's servants, whether in the New Testament or the Old Testament, have always given generously to support the work that God has been doing. And of course, in this era for, well, not so many of us have been involved for fully 53 years as Mr. Armstrong is, but certainly the church has supported the work that God is doing, the restoration of God's way in this era faithfully and generously for all these years. And certainly we want to continue on into this Feast of Tabernacles this autumn. But let me read to you just a summary anyway of what has been happening within the work to remind us where our offerings and our tithes have gone and what it has gone to support throughout this past year. Now, there's not a great deal here about some of the facets of the work, such as Ambassador College, or just the broadcast or telecast itself, but rather some of Mr. Armstrong's travels and what has been happening as far as publishing, baptisms, and the growth in the church is concerned. But all the way back on December 11th, Mr. Armstrong left on his first trip abroad since his illness in August of 1977. This trip was to Israel, where commemoration ceremonies were planned, marking the 10th anniversary of the work's relationship with Hebrew University and with the Israeli Archaeological Society. And I remember when I was on the faculty on the campus in Brickett Wood, every year we would help to organize the summer digs when the college students were participating together with the Hebrew University in some of the historic digs and archaeological expeditions there in the city of Jerusalem itself. And that began some 10 years ago this past summer. While there in Israel, Mr. Armstrong met with the leaders of the nation, including Prime Minister Begin and Foreign Minister Dayan. Then on the 17th of December, one of the reasons specifically for which Mr. Armstrong went to Israel, Jerusalem's Mayor Kolak arranged for the special inauguration ceremonies dedicating the city's new downtown park, which is a project that Mr. Armstrong, representing the work, has been involved in now for certainly over a year or a year and a half. But the city's new downtown park, called Liberty Bell Park, during which Mr. Armstrong was honored. At that time, Mr. Armstrong also spoke to the various civic leaders who were there on that occasion. And then a little later in the spring, now 1979, April 24th, Mr. Armstrong made a return visit to Japan, his first since July 1977, or just before his illness, and was welcomed back by 150 of Japan's leading citizens, including seven members of the Japanese Diet, or the Houses of Congress, as we would look upon it here in the United States. While in Japan, Mr. Armstrong was received by Prime Minister O'Hara, and then on the 5th of June, the Prime Minister of Tunisia, Mr. Nohira, received Mr. Armstrong, Mr. Rader, and Mr. Yamashita, a senior member of the Japanese Diet who was traveling with them, in the palace in Tunis, in Tunisia. Also in attendance was the Minister of Planning for that nation, as well as the Chief of Staff of the Cabinet of the Prime Minister. In addition to visiting Tunisia, then, Mr. Armstrong left Tunisia and went to Morocco and met with the Prime Minister of Morocco in the capital city of Rabat. And then in August of this year, Mr. Rader left for China and was gone for several weeks in preparation for Mr. Armstrong's visit behind the bamboo curtain, not behind the iron curtain, but behind the bamboo curtain, as they call it, for a little bit later this October or in November. Making contacts and arrangements with the Chinese government and university officials there in preparation for Mr. Armstrong's momentous trip to the People's Republic of China in late October or early November. So that's a tremendously important trip that is coming up immediately after the Feast of Tabernacles, and one for which we should continue to pray for Mr. Armstrong's health and strength to not only make a strenuous trip for the Feast of Tabernacles, speaking numerous times at Tucson, in Savannah, St. Petersburg, as well as holding ministerial meetings in each of those cities, and then returning from that almost immediately to leave for China. So it's something that we can even be thinking about and praying about right here during the Feast of Tabernacles. From the publishing division of the work, over the past 12 months, 449,165 new additions were made to the mailing list. In other words, almost 500,000 new people were added to the mailing list this past year alone. As of August of 1979, 278,304 of the Watts line calls have been received in Pasadena. During the last year, 13,819,669 Plain Truth magazines were distributed in the United States alone. Of course, there are international editions of the Plain Truth magazine going out in English across the face of the earth, through Canada, throughout Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Great Britain, the British Isles, and former British colonies, in addition to French, German, and Spanish. But across the United States alone, nearly 14 million magazines were sent out this year. As far as the correspondence course is concerned, there has been a rejuvenation, I guess you could say, of the correspondence course. Mr. Armstrong still considering rewriting a number of the lessons there or adding to it. But this year, there were 678,631 correspondence course lessons mailed throughout the United States. Between August of 1978 and July of 1979, a little earlier this summer, as far as the booklets and reprint articles are concerned, the Pasadena office for the United States sent out 1,859,279 booklets. So nearly 1,900,000 booklets and reprint articles also were mailed out. And so the Postal Department, a facet of the publishing division, this year sent out 16,346,734 pieces of mail. And I think, as we all know, not one dime, not one penny was charged for any of that literature. some nearly 500,000 new people writing in for various pieces of literature, questions they might have relative to the Bible, their own lives, and in response to that, in addition to the fact that no doubt a number of them are even sitting right here in these services today, some 16 million plus pieces of mail were sent out across the United States. During the past year, 52,950 people were added to the correspondence course list. 14,048 people, new people, became co-workers, and 53,577 became donors, financially assisting the work for the very first time. As of September 1979, there were 45,547 total co-workers in the United States and 60,348 donors right here within our own borders, the borders of this country. And then from publishing, they go on to mention that this year has seen a burgeoning in new programs and new ideas, some of which will involve church members individually. And some of those ideas had been written up and sent in by church members in the local areas to Richard Rice or to others in the publishing area, which are being used then on a nationwide basis. So if you have any ideas as far as spreading the gospel is concerned through the publishing area, be sure to write in, because those suggestions are not only warmly received, but many times literally put into effect and become part of our program across the country. New doors are being opened to reach people through pre-printed inserts in newspapers. How many of you have seen those? Would you hold up your hands, have had those in your area? Pre-printed inserts in the papers. Well, virtually only one or two in this room. I guess that's beginning on the West Coast. I think when you see it, you'll be amazed at the quality of the advertising which the work is doing, let's say, in comparison to inserts about maybe a local discount store or Coca-Cola or something of the sort like that. It really makes quite an impact. Usually it's done on the Sunday newspaper, which is the largest circulation of any of the daily editions from city to city, and it has made quite an impact on the West Coast. The new inserts in newspapers, direct mail advertising, newsstand distribution, and personal advertising. How many of you have newsstand distribution of the Plain Truth in your area? I'm sure that's nearly everyone, yeah, because that is pretty well across the country. We have already conducted very successful tests with the insert advertising. Yes, here the cities are mentioned: San Diego, Sacramento, Palm Springs, and Los Angeles. Other tests will be conducted in cities throughout the nation. Direct mailing to people from 12 purchase lists is presently being tested. So many people in the country are asking questions about what the problems and difficulties are facing the nation. Jimmy Carter was elected president. So many were enthusiastic here nearly 4 years ago now. And yet, suddenly, because of the burgeoning problems, so many difficulties, everything from the Middle East to the energy crisis to crime within the nation, and of course the overwhelming problem of inflation, have virtually decimated his popularity across the country. And so news reporters, journalists, evening television, the average individual from city to city are beginning to ask questions: where are we going? Not only what is the purpose of life, but what does life hold for me and my family tomorrow, next week, next month? And as a result of people becoming more interested in national and worldwide problems, perhaps purchasing these lists and sending out a form of advertising concerning answers to questions in individuals' and families' lives may now prove valuable. We're going to try it anyway. If it proves to be successful, it will open up a vast new avenue of promoting the Plain Truth magazine and preaching the gospel. And it just might be where we have kind of turned the corner as far as an individual family's wealth within this country is concerned as a result of inflation, the increased cost of fuel oil. I was reading an article that some of the cities here in Wisconsin are only 1 week away from being without any fuel oil for the winter. I guess the government does have several millions of barrels of fuel oil stored, but for some reason, at least in Wisconsin, they're not distributing it. So as problems and difficulties increase, as the average family is touched by the problems in the country today, perhaps they're going to be more interested in looking for solutions they've not thought of before. Maybe even for a change, look back to the Bible. For that's not really the right way to say it, though, is it, to look back to the Bible? Let's just say look forward to the Bible for the answers that we need. We will be producing a catalog for each church area on the various methods which you, the local congregations, can use to interest new subscribers to the Plain Truth magazine. Mr. Armstrong's book, The Incredible Human Potential, will be promoted using various marketing techniques, including the involvement of volunteer local church members. All of these will enable the local church member to have even a more direct and active part in backing Mr. Armstrong in the commission which God has given to him. Then from church administration, some interesting figures, baptisms, in spite of the difficulties and problems which we have faced not only this year, but really over the last year and a half now. The number of persons baptized for the past 12 months as of about the end of August when these figures were compiled was 2,399. The total number of U.S. baptized members, not numbers of church families, but simply baptized members, as of the 1st of September 1979 is 50,819. And that translates, as far as church attendance at the Feast of Tabernacles is concerned, within our borders, between 75 and 80,000 this year. The number of churches, the number of United States churches for the past 12 months, that is new congregations raised up, 7. Number of new churches worldwide for the past 12 months, whether in English or some other international language, 27. Total number of U.S. churches as of September 1979, 331. And the total number of local congregations worldwide across the face of the earth as of September 1979, 563. So we have some 563 local congregations, again with about 100,000 or a little over in attendance at the Feast of Tabernacles this year. Well, let's turn back to 2 Corinthians, the 9th chapter, for a final scripture concerning the offering this morning, something undoubtedly, because of the fact that we take it up annually, has been on people's minds for many days, perhaps the last several weeks anyway, in preparation for the feast. But in 2 Corinthians, the 9th chapter, beginning in verse 6, is a promise that God gives to us during these annual days, and something that we should take to mind, especially during times of upset and of difficulty within the nation, particularly times of financial duress, as we see the economy being weakened, the dollar becoming worth less. I think many times people don't realize when they see the price of gold or silver or other similar commodities going up that the price of gold is not, actually gold is not becoming more valuable, it's simply that the dollar is becoming worth less. Gold is no more valuable today than it was 10 years ago when it was sold for $35 an ounce. But the United States dollar is worth a lot less today than it was when $35 would buy an ounce of gold. And of course, those problems affect every one of us. Every time we go to the supermarket, every time we fill up with gasoline. I just bought some gasoline over here outside of Wisconsin Dells the other day, and I noticed now, I don't know if this is generally true from station to station across the country, but they're selling it in half-gallon prices. Have you noticed that? Well, that's just a gimmick for a number of reasons, but one of the ideas, of course, is you don't think you're paying quite as much. If you pay for 53 cents for a half gallon of gasoline, it doesn't sound quite as bad as $1.06 for 1 gallon of gasoline. The only problem when you're buying gasoline at the half gallon rate, you don't seem to quite get as many gallons for your money as you think you ought. I had to look at the filling station pump 2 or 3 times. I thought for a minute the fellow had stopped halfway through. But it just costs more these days. So every time we go to the gas station or every time we go to the grocery store, certainly the ravages of inflation are beginning to affect every one of us. And we need God's blessing, we need God's protection, so that less, because that's what happens every time we give of a tithe or give of an offering to God, numerically, the number of dollars you have is less than before you started. And we have to have the faith to trust in God, even during times of duress, to make that which is less go a lot further. And that's what God says here, beginning in verse 6. But this I say, brethren, he which sows sparingly shall reap sparingly. But he which sows bountifully, regardless of the times in which the individual is living, shall, and that is a promise from God, reap bountifully. Every man, according as he has purposed in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly because of the circumstances in which we live, or simply of necessity because God commands it, but seeing our purpose and understanding our calling and realizing the commission that God has given to all of us in this age, this era of the church. For God loves a cheerful giver, one who's thought about the circumstances, one who grasps and feels and understands the commission and has his whole heart in it. Because in verse 8, God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that you always, having all sufficiency, having our needs met in all things, may, as individuals, families, local congregations, and the church worldwide as a whole, that you may abound to every good work. Well, brethren, throughout this festival, let's seek God's inspiration, his help, his guidance, his direction. He commands us, in a sense, at the feast to rejoice, to be happy. But let's consider these offerings, how direly important they are, how needed they are. Put our hearts in them, be happy and thankful as we're able to give them, seeing that each of us has an opportunity to participate in this work worldwide and to carry this gospel to more people across the face of the earth, whether it's behind the bamboo curtain into China with Mr. Armstrong this October or November, or whether it's through the broadcast, the telecast, or the stacks, the piles of millions of pieces of literature that go out across this country year to year. Let's take up the offering then today and ask God's blessing on it, not only here, but across the United States and around the world, that it will meet the needs that we have in the work at this time.